Hello guys, welcome to the James Sinclair Podcast Show. This is where entrepreneurs come to find out how to grow their business in the fastest, quickest way possible. And today I'm joined by a guest. I know usually I fly solo and just give advice, but today I'm joined by Nathan Winch. Say hello, Nathan.
Hi.
Hi. He's already ignoring me. I said, say hello, Nathan. And he went, hi. He's from Yorkshire, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Well, he's come down today and he's seen electricity and it's a brighter, it's warmer.
Internet.
Yeah,
fantastic.
We've got the M25.
Yeah.
All those great things.
Fantastic.
And he's agreed to come see me because he is a 28-year-old that owns 38 properties or controls 38 properties, making £5,000 to £6,000 a month. And it's just unbelievable. He's brought your chum here. Who's your chum that you brought?
My chum's Ben Deaton. He's my business partner. So we work together.
Ben, the business partner. Say hello, Ben. You can share.
Hello.
We're a bit relaxed here. And if you ever want to sit here, mate, and just get up close, just come and sit down. I'm very relaxed about my stuff. Usually I do my podcast in my office, which is next door. Yeah. The phones are ringing. And I love that sort of natural feel about it. You know, someone comes in, bangs the door. You know, we just jam with it because we want it to be like real business situation. Yeah. Now, I am fascinated by your story. That's why I don't know how I sort of found out that what you was doing and I messaged you and I agreed. So what you just told before we came on and got on that you sold a business. What was the business?
So I started a business probably about 6 or 7 years ago working with the NHS. So I came out of uni, did a stint in the NHS, worked in procurement. And noticed there was a gap in the market for smaller players for the same sort of stuff. So the NHS kind of, not getting ripped off, but they were paying top dollar for pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And I thought, some of this stuff's really, really basic.
Why are people exploiting the NHS, aren't you?
Because it's like a monopoly.
No one knows what's going on.
No one knows what's going on.
Too big.
Too big. Smaller companies are probably less sort of trusted by the NHS, and the way that they buy is very inefficient, but that's another discussion.
Yeah.
But it
frustrates a lot. It's always in the press.
It does,
that,
and it puts small businesses off, I think. Whereas the NHS is fair game for any size business. It's just you need to know the entry points and how to get into, you know, certain contracts.
And so what did you supply to them?
We supplied hand sanitizer.
Just hand sanitizer. What sort of revenues were you doing then?
So we were doing sort of $250,000 a year, something like that, I believe.
Just selling that? Brilliant.
Just selling hand sanitizer.
Where did you make it yourself?
We did. Well, we worked with a supplier, a chemical supplier.
White labeled it.
They had an innovative kind of Intel inside sort of product. And we were kind of more marketing, that's what we specialised in. So we sort of sold their product to the NHS, and we won a contract, and obviously I knew what I was doing because I'd worked in there a little bit, my background was in that sort of sciencey stuff.
So you're going to go back and do some of that again?
Maybe.
But that's... So if you build up a business like that, that is something of huge value that you can sell. So you did sell it?
We did, we sold it to the supplier.
And did you make money from that sale?
We did make money from that sale.
And you invested all that into?
Property, other businesses. So I'm still really passionate about businesses. So I've got some investments in some startups. Going to see one of them tomorrow, actually. Just like making money doing deals.
So why invest in startups? Why don't you set up your own thing?
I think I get a buzz over helping other people grow.
Yeah.
And when you see somebody that's got the passion, but they're making all the same mistakes an entrepreneur makes, that's very predictable when you've done it before, you can prevent them from doing that and speed up their growth.
And what about, what percentage do you take when you invest?
Normally between 20 and 30%.
So you get that tax break?
Yeah.
I understand that. So if they go bust, you get most
make
of
sure
their
EIS, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. EIS, that was the... I knew what I wanted to say, and it just wasn't there.
I saw it.
So it's completely risk-free for you, really.
I can offset it. Yeah, that's fine.
And you feel good about doing that?
I feel really good, because these are people that are really driven. But they micromanage. They're typical entrepreneurs.
What do you like? What sort of businesses?
So I like service-based businesses, and I like low capital-intensive type businesses.
Yeah.
Simply because my money is.
Are you allowed to talk about one of them?
Yeah. So I've got one called UCard. They're a discount loyalty card. They're starting in Leeds and they're spreading outwards.
So they
work with business. They get businesses to offer a discount to their members. Yeah. They charge their members and they promote the businesses and help them.
So Nath, with your involvement, has the business grown?
Yes. Yeah.
What have you brought to the table other than cash?
So cash, help, sort of helping them scale, because they were very...
Give me some juice on the
give
help.
Give me some juice. So
what were they not doing?
Stopping the micromanaging, the first thing. So outsourcing, bringing in, you know, sort of piggybacking off other people's experience. Contacts as well, I'll admit. Yeah. That it did help with the contacts. And obviously money as well.
When you've invested in these companies, are the entrepreneurs that you've invested in, are they scared to employ people?
Yeah.
Why is that? I mean, I want a bit of a thing about this. Did you employ people in your business?
I did, yeah.
I just don't understand the huge fear that businesses have to employ.
Well, I'll be honest, it took me a while to get over the try and do it all myself mentality.
Yeah. So what was the aha moment on that?
I think I just was forced into doing it. I just didn't have the time, and I just had to. And then I got investors in my business.
Did you?
And they were very experienced on it.
Did you enjoy having investors, or did you hate it, or what was
A bit of both. So I had an investor who was from an environment that wasn't really conducive to the slow growth that you expect from the NHS. So it's difficult to get in with the NHS, but once you're in, it's money for life, pretty much. But it's a slow process, and they were very fast-paced retail investor, and they were quite agitated, frustrated.
Because he wasn't doing the speed,
and obviously, you know, because we had to bid on contracts, it's very different to kind of going out, knocking on doors, and things like that.
What did you do to pacify them?
We bought them out essentially. But so I got a great big horrible loan to buy them out, and then we did really well, sold the business, and the rest is history.
Did you get entrepreneurs relief when you sold it?
I did, yeah. It's 10%, yeah.
So nothing's more profitable than that, is it?
No.
This is what I mean. You know, I mean, we're going to get on to property in a bit, obviously.
we will. Bit of digression.
But I always tell people, you know, if you really want to do property, business first, property second.
It helps a lot.
Because if you're good at business, you know, banks love you, and they'll help you with property stuff. You know, I've just before we talked about my bank managers, like, help me on property stuff so much. It's so much easier if they can grease the wheels if they know that you're a trading business.
Exactly.
I mean, when I'd done my property seminar the other day that I was talking to you just about earlier, I was sort of explaining where the Bank of England goes to banks and says, look, if you're lending someone a first-time buyer's mortgage and you're lending them £100,000, you've got to keep £100,000 on your balance sheet. Do you know how this works?
Mm, yeah, it's like, what's the name of it? Sort of balance, leverage sort of thing.
Yeah, so, but then if they go and lend someone that wants to buy a commercial property, they say, right, you want to lend them £100,000, you've got to keep £150,000, for example, on your balance sheet. Yeah. So actually, they have to keep more liquidity when they lend. Now, the Bank of England loves banks lending to businesses that are employing people, because obviously government are saying, you know, they much rather that. So when they can say, when the bank can say, well, yeah, we're buying that property because it's for business and it's part of a holistic view, they're so much more keen to get it through and stuff. And I don't think people really understand that, you know, like why they go, well, why is a first-time buyer's lending cheaper than an experienced investor? It's because of the cost of liquidity, you know, and how much they have to keep on their balance sheet. But we digress. So you sold a business. It's all going well. Are you married, kids?
I'm not. No, I'm free and single.
Young, free and single. I bet Yorkshire love you, don't they, eh? Mr. Success.
Yeah,
over
well,
there.
I kind of am seeing someone at the moment, actually, I'll be honest. But yeah, she's... in fact, I'll probably get it in the neck for actually saying I'm single. So I am not single.
No.
So yeah.
How long have you been with her?
Probably about 6 months. Actually.
6 months.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's like the make or break.
No, she's lovely. Bless her. She's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, that's
big
good
support.
What does she do?
She works at Asda.
Oh right. Do you think it's difficult being with? Would you class yourself as an entrepreneur?
I would.
That your mind never switches off. How does that? Because, you know, I'm in a relationship. Nats, I think, struggles. You know, my Nats struggles with that somewhat. And I just wonder, has it not really kicked in yet at 6 months?
Well, she'll tell you that I never switch off. I'm always working till late at night. But she's very supportive, so it doesn't really make it. But we'll see. We'll see how tolerable she is as time goes on. But you can't, because there's always
DNA.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
It's how you're wired. Yeah. It's impossible to switch off. And you know, as far as you're concerned, you're not working. You're just seeking more opportunity and wanting to grow.
Yeah, it's a DNA thing.
It is a DNA thing.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things asked about me is, can you teach entrepreneurship or are you an entrepreneur? And what I always compare it to is base talent in other things. So, for example, you know, some people are just naturally talented at singing, but other people can be taught how to sing to a base level. But the ones that have got that base talent, they're the ones that soar high.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think this game that we're wandering down called entrepreneurship, where basically you live to work, whereas most people work to live. And it's not because it's because you want to. And that's the other thing. And you know, most of the world is not like that. And that they find it hard to understand. That's why you talk to someone about me and I talk to someone like you. It's this fascinating fusion of
really
personalities
is.
That come together straight away, because they're like, I'm rare, you're rare, you really love working, you know, this is weird, you know, most people can't understand that. You know, you go on holiday, and why are you going on holiday? To read books and think, you know, like that. Everyone's going, like, when I watch myself go in the airport, so like Nats and I go in the airport, she goes and buys all those trashy celebrity magazines, you know, and she piles them up, Heat and all of that too, you know, all the stuff they get. Whereas I'm like, you know, she saw me, like, where did we go? The other day, I don't know where we went. Oh God, I've been 5 countries in the last month. I picked up David Cameron's book and Everyone's Stupid, like a personal development book.
Yeah.
And she went, you're on bloody holiday. Why are you reading this stuff? You know, just, you know, go and get the Beano or something, you know, just let your brain relax. I just like, I can't, like, you know, relaxing for me. Do you have LBC up in?
I listen to it, yeah.
I am, absolutely, I love it. You know, there's the Business Hour on there. I love listening to what's going on in the world. And like, you know, we get in the car and she's like, I just can't stand listening to people having a Barney, you know, like, can't we put on some like music and just like, but it's who you are. It's just,
it is.
Right. Let's go back to these 38 properties, you know, because that was a bit of a long intro there.
Yeah.
But I think important as it was to understand how a 28-year-old sold his business and then is controlling 38 properties. What's interesting for me is you're controlling those 38 properties in 12 months.
Yeah.
How?
So I think it's applying a business mindset to this long property game. So
fantastic.
I personally think business people probably make better property investors than property investors.
Absolutely, I couldn't
agree
more.
Because of the way we approach the methodology and the operational side of things.
Couldn't agree more.
So I've systemized straight away, which has allowed me to scale to speaking to people. So advertising, getting people to come to me.
So I think you're assuming that people watching this and listening to this will have an understanding of the mechanics of it, and I don't think they do.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is,
okay,
what is controlling a property?
So yeah, so this is the funny thing. So whilst I was running my business, I was investing in property, but I was doing it very traditional. So 20%, 25% down, saving up, 25% down, using profits essentially. And then I came across this weird and wonderful thing called
Which still works, by the way.
Which still works. Yeah, no, it still works. Yeah. It's just a bit slower.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I'm very much about, you know, as much as you can, as quick as you can, for as long as you can type of thing. So I came over this thing called a lease with option to purchase, which essentially means I'll lease a property, take over the management, and
I understand the process, I think you're just assuming that people understand this. You know, that when you say lease a property, like people, they don't understand, like most people, unless you know, you don't know, you know.
Right.
So basically you're finding a property that's for sale.
Yeah, for sale or distressed owner, vendor.
So a motivated
sort of
seller, someone going through a marriage, death, divorce,
something
bankruptcy,
like
so one of those things. You're going up to them and you're saying to them, look, I see you got your property for sale. I'll buy it off of you, but I want to lease it on a long-term rent.
Yeah, long-term rent.
So that you benefit from the capital growth from it, but you agree the purchase price at the beginning.
Right, at the beginning.
Now, here's the thing that I just wanted to, because you assume everyone knows,
you
but
do.
They just don't.
Yeah.
even experienced property investors just don't realise that this is a, I always say to people, that process has been going on in the business world forever. You know, that's, you know, you know, Holiday Inn, they will go up to, you know, someone that owns a hotel and they will say, we'll take over this hotel, we'll buy it off of you in 20 years' time, and then they will run it, they'll pay them a higher rent, they'll put their brand on it. You know, like, hotels have been doing this stuff for ages. I've bought businesses, tons of businesses, based on, we'll buy it now, we'll agree the price, we'll run it for 3 years, increase the price of the business, then the bank will happily support it because you've proved the point. That's, you're basically taking a really old-fashioned business methodology, but you're now doing it with property.
Yeah.
So you're going up to someone saying, right, this, you know, you want 100 grand for it, but well, you know, then what do you do? You know, explain.
Yeah, so we'll normally offer the purchase price, something like that, or make whatever works for them. It's, every situation is different, but we'll go.
But
we'll,
I still don't think you're explaining this to me. Right. So you're going up and saying you've got it up for 100k, for example.
Yeah.
Then what do you say to these people?
So I'll look at the condition and I'll say, we can offer 100k, but it might not be worth 100k. It might need a little bit of work, something like that. Yeah. So we'll say, well, we'll give you the 100k, but I'll, you know, have the right to buy within 5 to 7 years. And then I say, but in that time, I appreciate it's a long time to wait. Yeah. In that time, I'll lease the property, which is similar to rent, only it's over longer periods of time. And like a business leases a premises, we'll be responsible for everything. So we'll never ask you to do anything or spend any money. And that's you.
And then you pay them a rent.
Yeah. Fixed lease payment each month. Yeah.
Exactly the same as a lease in the commercial world.
Exactly the same.
So say you say, all right, it's £500 a month for the next 7 years, but in 7 years, then you'll improve the property. You've agreed the 100k, but if the market value is then 170k in 7 years' time,
I still have the right to buy 100k.
And then you, in effect, it's 100% finance because it would be valued at 170. Blah blah blah. What, one of the things that I have a problem with this is, because more and more people are going to be doing this, I think it's getting more and more attractive and more mainstream, which is in many ways an opportunity. I can just see that in 3-4 years down the line, 5 years down the line, someone's going to go to a judge, take it to court and say, well, look, this is now worth 200 grand and I only agreed 100 grand. Is it not more sensible to give them a deposit on day one of, say, 5 grand, so that if you went to court in 5 years' time, so, well, look, I gave them a deposit.
Yeah, a lot of the time I do. Yeah, a lot of the time I do. So
I worry about that for people, because so then a judge will say, well, hang on a sec, you received a lump up front, plus you've had the, just to protect yourself.
Yeah, and I do. And another kind of way to kind of remediate, because again, it may be regulated in future as well, so you've got to do things properly. So I'll get solicitors to represent both sides, make sure that the selling party understands what they're signing. I think that's important, you know, and paying them an amount of money. Because this, again, this is why we don't like the term no money down. There's always something to spend. Yeah. That's one of the things that I generally do. Yeah, is I'll offer some money up front, which can be seen as a tangible deposit.
And do you try and not wait 5-7 years? Do you try and want to?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'll do it as quick as possible. Yeah. So I've got one in Nottingham where the agreed price was 57k. And today, next door sold a couple of weeks ago for 114. So I'll do that straight away. But I've got another 10 years for that. So, but I might as well just do it now.
Get it
out
of the way.
Because so ownership is what you should aim towards, really.
Yeah, because you will get people try and take that to court. And then you've just got to pay legal fees to fight it. Even though you've got a concrete, you know, I've done this in business. Yeah. You know, even though you've got a concrete contract, if you like, you know, if someone's prepared to challenge it and
still
put a few grand,
that's
time, money, effort, and frankly, energy, which, you know, stops you from doing other good deals. That's interesting. So, and you've done this in 12 months on steroids. You've basically done, you know, practically one a fortnight.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And that's generating, you tell me, between 5 and 6k a month.
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
A positive cash flow. So when you take them on, you're not doing service accommodation, HMOs, you're just passive, single let to, and that's why I used to own HMOs, I hated them. All of them houses, I've turned back into ASTs. I was doing rent to rent the other way round.
Giving somebody your property
for rent. Because I want, you know, you see all these pictures around me if you watch. In fact, these are just some of our companies, and they take some energy, these things.
Just
in there,
a bit.
And they're more profitable, and you know what we're really about. And I always say about property, you know, you want it as passive and stress-free as possible. And so So basically, when you're taking, can you give me an example of a live deal and a tenant, just so that, because I still think people are going to be confused about it.
Yeah, so I'll go back to the example I just told you. So we've got an option for 57k. The house is worth about 114 today.
So go right to the beginning. So you go and see the person.
Right.
Where do you find the property?
Okay, so this, so it was part of a...
Nathan, expect that no one understands, you know.
I'm trying. Yeah. Right back to the beginning. So I had a distressed landlord.
But how do you find this distressed landlord?
Marketing.
You
know, marketing. So I'll
but explain. You know what I mean? You didn't just pop down Costa Coffee and go, oh, you're in the shit, aren't you? You know, like...
Sometimes that happens. So we'll do sort of marketing in industry-relevant media.
But what does that mean? I mean, what's a hanging hat?
So things like magazines that landlords might want to buy.
Right.
Or Facebook targeted ads, or
two landlords. So these are professional landlords.
Accidental. Yeah, everything across the board.
Just to explain here, what's an accidental landlord? In my opinion, this is someone that's upscaling their house, and so they can't sell their other house, so they just rent it out. They've met someone, and they move into another property. So then they've got one property spare. I call them someone's death, divorce. All of those things. All of a sudden, you're a landlord, and you didn't plan to be one, rather than one on purpose. I just wanted to explain. That's what I meant by accidental landlords. And do you agree?
Yeah, I agree totally. Yeah.
Okay. So you go in these, you find them to these landlords through going. You market in. So tell me your piece of the marketing. You know, just so that.
Like actual copy or.
Yeah, but what? Because people have been like, well, what's he talking about? Like, what magazine?
So there's magazines like the NLA, you know, the associations, all that sort of thing.
So you get known in all the, where the landlords are hanging about, you get known.
Yeah, and disrupt that space.
Yeah, so, I do that in all of these businesses, by the
way. Exactly.
Yeah.
So networking meetings, it could be anything. We like to have a mix of marketing messages, be a bit more credible. And then you'll come across somebody that's interested. So they pique their interest and they say, right, well, I've got some properties that, you know, in this particular situation, he was a landlord, he owned about 10, and he was absolutely skint. One of the tenants was in such a mire that they...
See, this is what I think that people won't understand. In their mindset, they think, well, hang on a sec, we've got a bloke here, he's got 10 properties, how can he be skint?
Yeah.
So how was he skint?
So he was... Not optimising the properties to the best way. He wasn't increasing his rent with inflation. So he'd got like a rent that was like normal for 15, 20 years ago.
Because he'd had enough and he'd got tired.
He was pretty old. You know, he was knocking on a bit.
Can I just explain here, guys? If you're watching this, like this happens in the business world. Like, people just you can buy businesses for nothing every single day of the week because people have had enough of the things. They've fallen out of love with them and they're getting... They just have lost their energy, and this is happening in property all the time as well, isn't it?
All the time. Yeah.
So he's got his 10 properties.
Yeah.
Did you take all 10 on?
So big chunk of those was all in one transaction. Yeah. So he was. And one of them was proven to be a bit of hassle. So the tenant was in such a bad situation. The boiler had broke. They had a small, like a newborn baby. They'd gone to the council. They'd got an environmental protection order on the property. And he was just ignoring the inspections. I was thinking, you've got to do something about this. He said, well, yeah, I want a quick sale. I was like, but the property's knackered. You're not going to get the... He was on an interest only, so he wanted the redemption value, which is the amount he owes on the property as the purchase price.
What was that?
Which was £57,114.20.
So he was looking... He just wanted to get out. Mm. So he wasn't looking for...
No. And he wanted all the properties gone for that same reason as well. So I said, look, we'll do it in this way. We'll give you the amount, but I'll take them. I think we did it for 14 years, that one. So, and then we said, we'll give you it. In the meantime, we'll take it over. We'll take on the environmental protection order, do the work that the council's forcing you to do, and you can relax.
And so so when you took on all 10 properties, what did you say to him you'd give him each month?
His mortgage, his interest payment.
So he makes no money?
Makes no money. We gave him 10% above his interest payment, just in case there was any changes in rate to absorb the changes in rate.
So now you've done that, why don't you just go and get a commercial mortgage?
We could do. It's an option. I've not had this one for very long, so...
So you go to like Shawbrook and Aldermore.
Yeah, you could, you can get a commercial mortgage for the whole...
Because they'll love 10 properties, won't they?
Yeah, portfolio finance, all that sort of stuff, yeah.
So in effect, you've had some repair. So on top of those, you're making profit on top of what you're paying him.
Yeah.
Did you put all the rents up on everything once you've done them up?
No, not yet. So when we've done them up, we will. There's a couple I've already done up. There's one that I'm doing up now. So we will increase the rent.
What amazes me about, though, that this guy at some point must have had some nous about being a landlord, because he's built up to 10 properties. Exactly. He's just had enough, hasn't he?
He's just had enough. It's a considerable size. I mean, I was surprised when I was like, oh, so you want to get rid of this one? He was like, yeah, and the other nine as well. I was like, right, okay. He was just knackered. Absolutely tired landlord. Specific textbook case, yeah.
But he has made money out of that.
He has made money, yeah, of course he has. I mean, he'll have bought those for much less than what I'm sort of paying, so... Doesn't really matter. He's probably remortgaged, so who knows?
Wow!
But it's interesting.
And so that was a block of 10. So the other 28, have they all been hunter gatherers?
Yeah, hunter gatherers. So some single, some's got two, three, yeah. One. It's just been a mix, really.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
So out of 30, what's that? 38 properties. So each one's, you know, making you a few hundred quid each one. So you do need scale to make some money.
You do need scale, yeah. If you're going to do single let, I mean, like yourself, I've got one HMO. So my portfolio is about just over 40, and the one HMO gives me 99% of the hassle. And then the others, you don't. I've got one guy that hasn't phoned me in like 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Pat, who lives in one of my... She's been in there 11 years. Just
happily trundling along.
From my point of view, what I like is... houses, never flats. I have got some flats, but I'd never buy any other flats. I like three bed houses, freehold, because I find people stay.
They do, yeah.
Is that what have you got a sort of? Have you got a rule book?
I do now. I didn't before because obviously you get what you find. Yeah. But now I've kind of got a little bit more nous about it. I'll specifically search, and it's exactly the same. It's three bed because you get families, and families build homes. Yeah. They don't just rent a house. So you get them to typically stay longer.
What about if a family member, one of your tenants that was a family, came to you and said, I'd like to buy this house off of you? Would you consider it?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
And what would you do from a tax point of view on that? Because you're going to have to pay capital gains on that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, so what I'd probably do is sell them the option to buy for a certain amount, and then they can exercise it themselves, and I'll help them along with that process. But like you say, I'd speak to my accountant and see what was the best way anyway.
So do you own all of your properties in a limited company?
Yes, yeah.
So you could go and sell that portfolio?
The company, yeah.
And then they would only pay 0.5% shares, wouldn't they? 0.5% stamp duty.
Yeah.
Because I always wonder, like, in that situation, if you put a trading business mixed into it and you sold, would you get entrepreneurs relief on that? I've got my account.
That's interesting, actually, yeah.
I always wonder if people... I mean, would you consider selling your portfolio of 40 properties now?
For the right price, yeah.
And what would be the right price?
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't even know. What, 40 properties? I couldn't even tell you, mate.
Because you could just do that again then, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really interesting. I mean, absolute fact. Have we got comments on there? Has anyone No, we've probably been going on too long, haven't we?
Well, I've got 30 minutes on the dictaphone.
Oh, it's just really... is there anything else that you want to add? I don't want to give everything away you're doing, but I just...
Yeah.
What I think, it's just really interesting, though, is I always have to try and do this. Is like when I speak to property investors, you know, don't assume everyone knows, and that's what I was trying to do with you. And you were talking in call the proprietary language, you know, it's like, I'm a doctor, you're a doctor, let's talk medical.
Yeah.
And yeah, but most people are patients, you know.
Yeah,
it's just fascinating. I'm going to finish it there. This is going to be on the James Sinclair podcast. Thanks very much. That's great. See you real soon. Bye-bye.